Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, June 15th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Council defers zoning ruling near Greentree. Traffic, lack of already built east-west connector behind decision. By Stuart Doreen. The Midland City Council voted Tuesday to defer zoning changes to an area in northwest Midland where developers want to add housing and an office development. The area is southeast of the intersection at Greentree Boulevard and Midland Drive, and residents from Greentree and Mockingbird Heights told the council they had issues with traffic, safety, and the types of homes being planned. The main reason for the deferral was the traffic and the lack of an already built east-west connector from Holiday Hill Road to Midland Drive that would be an alternative to potential traffic cutting across Greentree Boulevard. The council listened and said they wanted staff to examine potential options for traffic created by the development, specifically what can be done to extend Mockingbird Lane from Midland Drive to Holiday Hill Road. The hope is that right-of-way can be secured, funding planned, and construction take place while new development takes place just north of the current Mockingbird Heights development. The zoning and plats for the housing and office projects had already been approved by the City of Midland's Planning and Zoning Commission. Development officials told the council they wanted to build upscale garden homes that require little maintenance. They said the homes planned would be 2,800 to 3,300 square feet. Developers expected a cost per home of $550,000 to $700,000. The deferral means that developers can come back to the city with another zone request and not have to wait a year. Scott Dufford, the councilman representing District 1, generally North Midland, said he wants to see the development come back as a planned district, giving this council or future councils more control of the future development of the land, and that the types of homes planned remain consistent with what developers are saying currently. Councilman Jack Ladd Jr. was consistent during the public hearing, asking about what the city could do when it came to the alternative east-west route, whether that was Mockingbird or the building of Occidental Parkway, which would take place north of the Greentree development. One common complaint was that the 50 to 70 homes planned and then future development would add traffic, specifically traffic of people taking children to school at Fasken Elementary. Also, residents expressed concerns about increased traffic on Greentree Boulevard, which is one lane each way, because of the office complex, which is planned to be built north of the housing development and southeast of Midland Drive and Greentree Boulevard. Residents describe the area as a country club community where children ride their bikes, residents ride in golf carts, and people participate in an active lifestyle. They believe that additional traffic will join those living there and those driving to Greentree Country Club that often go faster than the 25-mile-per-hour speed limit. A member of the Greentree Homeowners Association stated that there were around 750 homes in the Greentree development and 1,000 members of the Greentree Country Club. Greentree Boulevard used to be two lanes each way, but was changed to be one lane with a bike cart path and walking lane. Greentree Boulevard was one of the first roads paved during the $100 million citywide road bond effort. The council voted to defer the zone changes related to the residential development and office development, and then voted down a related plat. Developers can come back immediately with a new plat, when conversations with the city start again about the development. Project officials will again have to go through Planning and Zoning Commission with new requests for zone changes and a plat. Dan Corrales voted against the deferment as written, as he wanted a specific date when the council would again take up the issue. This article is entitled, Official Addresses Mass Shooting Survival. Battalion Chief offers tips during Permian Basin STEPS Safety Network at Midland College on Tuesday. By Mella McEwen. The surge in mass shootings across the nation, 250 so far this year, was on the minds of those attending the Permian Basin STEPS, Service, Transmission, Exploration, and Production Safety Network at Midland College's Carrasco Room on Tuesday morning. It was a topic that drew considerable attention as Jamie Farmer, battalion chief with the Midland Fire Department, detailed how to survive. He said, recent events have increased interest in training he helps offer, the Civilian Response to Active Shooter Events program. The first response should be to breathe, he said, and calm yourself so you can better respond. He then offered a mantra to help increase survival chances. Add, avoid, deny, defend. Avoid the attacker and escape the site if possible. If that's not possible, then run into another location, lock the door, turn off the lights, silence cell phones, block entrances, and hide to deny the attacker access. If necessary, be willing to defend yourself and others, he said. Take a position that enables you to go after the gun or knife, he said, and put up a fight. You have to fight dirty, Farmer said. This is a fight for survival. There are no rules. You have to find within yourself that amazing will to live. Denial that an attack is happening by thinking it's balloons popping or a car backfiring kills people, he said. He added that playing dead isn't an effective option either. During the Virginia Tech rampage that killed 32, one student tried to play dead and was shot 3 times, Farmer pointed out. Response to active shooting events have changed significantly, and that evolution began in April 1999 with the attack on Columbine High School in Colorado. That was an event no one had seen before or trained for, Farmer said. Now, police respond more rapidly with the focus on stopping the killings first. And emergency medical personnel will now enter the scene, which has been cleared but not secured, said Farmer, who responded to the shootings in Midland, Odessa in August 2019, along with Eric Harrell, who was assisting him with the presentation. That shooting, in which 8 were killed, including the shooter, was the first time an active shooter was mobile, he said. One thing he recommended to make EMTs' jobs better and help save lives is to receive Stop the Bleed training, medical training that teaches how to pack gunshot wounds, apply pressure, and apply tourniquets. For all the attention school shootings have received, Farmer said businesses are more frequently the site of mass attacks. Next are outdoor events, he said, citing Las Vegas, where 59 people attending a country music festival were killed and 851 injured. Then schools, followed by other locations. Farmer noted that mass attacks are moving beyond shootings. He pointed to a mass casualty event in Santa Barbara, California, that began when the attacker stabbed 3 people to death. He then went on a drive-by shooting spree, and after running out of ammunition, he began running over people. Law enforcement has not been able to build a comprehensive profile of possible mass shooters, Farmer said. But there are risk factors like a history of violence, substance abuse, mental health issues, suicidal thoughts, negative family dynamics, isolation or instability, and others concerned about their behavior. The public can help by paying attention to red flags. Some shooters broadcast their intentions beforehand, he said, like the shooter at Marjory Stoneman Douglas in Parkland, Florida, and the shooter in Uvalde. Keep paying attention to those red flags, he urged. This article is called Small Bites. Chewy's delivers with Tex-Mex food and drinks, eclectic decor. Takeaways from Long-Awaited Opening by Mercedes Cordero. Chewy's officially opened its Midland location on Tuesday. A day before, the restaurant hosted a fundraiser for the Bynum School, and the Reporter-Telegram received a sneak peek of the restaurant and its food. Here are some takeaways. Food. The Tex-Mex restaurant is bringing all of its signature dishes. For those familiar with the menu, the Chicka Chicka Boom Boom enchiladas and the Big As You'll Face burritos are still one of the most popular dishes among patrons. Try their flour tortillas with any of the fajitas plates. For those eating with a picky eater, the chicken flautas are a great choice. Make sure to try the queso and the creamy jalapeno sauce along with tortilla chips. Drinks. Chewy's takes pride in their drinks always being made with freshly squeezed juice. Here are some of the recommended drinks by Chewy's bartender Jorge Bocanegra. Any of Chewy's famous margaritas, the strawberry mojito, and the New Mexican martini, which is infused with green chilies. Also available, Chewy's famous margaritas by the gallon. Happy hour is from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Mondays through Fridays. Drink specials include $1.50 off regular house margaritas, $1.50 off grande house margaritas, $1 off house Texas martinis, $1 off domestic beers, and $1 off glasses of wine, and $5 queso. Dessert. If you are a fan of H-E-B's Tres Leches cake, you will definitely want to order a Tres Leches cake. Like the kids would say, 10 out of 10 would recommend. If Tres Leches cake isn't your cup of tea, try the Chewy Chewy Churro Bites. Atmosphere. The Midland location does not lack Chewy's signature eclectic design. From the hand-carved wording fish swimming from the ceiling in La Chihuahua Bar, the Elvis Shrine, and the Hubcap Room. According to a patron attending the event, it felt like you left Midland and being transported into the city. Keep an eye out for the framed pictures of local dogs collected earlier this year. This article is entitled, Odessa Continues to Deal with Water Main Break. Midland County sends water tanker to assist Odessa Fire Department. By Mercedes Cordero. The Midland County Emergency Management Department is assisting the city of Odessa with emergency preparation due to a water main break in the city. A water tanker holding 6,000 gallons, or 140 barrels of water, was dispatched just before midnight Monday to Odessa Fire Rescue Station 5 to pre-stage for potential fires. A major water break at the intersection of 42nd and San Jacinto caused the city to issue a boil water notice. Crews worked Tuesday to close valves in the system to isolate the break, but the process was taking longer than anticipated, according to a press release from the city of Odessa. Odessa residents should expect a significant loss in water pressure and/or no water at all. A significant portion of the residents remains without water at this time, according to the release. People should boil water prior to use for cooking, drinking, brushing teeth, making ice, washing dishes, and any other consumption. The city of Odessa set up water distribution sites Tuesday. Water is limited to one case per vehicle. Water distribution sites. The city of Odessa set up water distribution sites Tuesday. Water is limited to one case per vehicle. McKinney Park, 625 West Poole Road. Hector County Coliseum, 4201 Andrews Highway. FM 1936 and West University. This article is entitled City Honors Pioneer for Land Donation by Midland Reporter Telegram. At Tuesday's Midland City Council meeting, the City of Midland accepted a donation of 14.57 acres of land from Pioneer Natural Resources for a portion of the extension of Fairgrounds Road north of Loop 250. This donation will save the city approximately $400,000 in land acquisition costs on this project, according to the city. This project will allow drivers to travel from I-20 north to Occidental Parkway, which will alleviate the traffic congestion currently felt on Big Spring north of Loop 250, says Jose Ortiz, City of Midland Engineering Services Director. It will also allow for future development in Northeast Midland. Midland Mayor Patrick Payton issued a proclamation at the council meeting in gratitude to Pioneer Natural Resources for its continued partnership and generosity. Community collaborators like these make Midland one of the best places to live and work, said Daniel Pender, Pioneer Natural Resources Surface, Land and Business Development Director. We are honored to steward our resources to benefit residents and make a lasting impact in the Midland community. The Fairgrounds Road Extension Project is expected to begin in late 2022. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled, Biden Ally Floats 21% Surtax on Oil Profits, by Nancy Cook and Laura Davison, Bloomberg. Oil companies that record a profit margin better than 10% would face a new federal surtax under a plan developed by a key senator, as Democrats and the White House struggled to curb U.S. energy costs and broader inflation. The proposal by Senator Ron Wyden, an Oregon Democrat who chairs the Tax Writing Finance Committee, would mean oil companies faced federal taxes of as much as 42% on profits considered excessive. The 21% U.S. corporate tax rate plus a new 21% surtax, according to two people briefed on the proposal. Oil lobby pushes eased tariffs, faster permits to tame prices. Wyden has yet to release his plan publicly, and he'll likely need all 50 in the Senate Democratic caucus to support it in order to overcome united Republican opposition. He's among several Democratic lawmakers, including Senator Sheldon Whitehouse and Representative Peter DeFazio, who have discussed targeting what they consider excessive oil company profits. The proposal I'm developing would help reverse perverse incentives to price gouge by doubling the corporate tax rate on companies' excess profits, eliminating egregious buybacks, and reducing accounting tricks, Wyden said about the proposal he plans to introduce in the coming weeks. By contrast, companies that provide relief to consumers by either reducing prices or investing in new supply would not be affected. The idea has caught the attention of top Biden aides in recent weeks as they search for any and all ideas to tackle rising energy costs ahead of the November midterm elections. It's unlikely the proposal will become law by fall, but introducing it gives Democrats a platform to present to voters, showcasing how they would handle inflation with wider majorities in Congress. Real issue. With regard to the proposal, Bharat Ramamurthy, Deputy Director of the National Economic Council, told Bloomberg TV's Balance of Power with David Weston, "We're not ruling that out of consideration. We've made that clear." Biden, Ramamurthy added, has made clear there's a real issue here with the level of production by the oil companies and the profits that they are making right now after the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Republicans are almost certain to uniformly oppose the windfall tax idea, while some Democrats, such as Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia, have expressed skepticism of proposals to hike taxes on fossil fuel producers. At a port in Los Angeles on Friday, President Joe Biden specifically called out ExxonMobil for raking in bumper earnings. "We're going to make sure everyone knows Exxon's profit. Exxon made more money than God last year," Biden said. Taxing excessive oil company profits is one of many policy ideas under consideration in the White House, two administration officials said. Yet, internally, aides remain concerned such a tax could hurt ongoing efforts to boost the supply of oil. If combined with a gasoline rebate, a windfall profits tax would both deter supply and encourage fuel demand, said Kevin Book, managing director of research firm Clearview Energy Partners, LLC. It is the opposite of balancing the market. An idea out of the Treasury Department to place a cap on the price of Russian oil, in concert with European allies, has gained far more traction inside the administration. Wyden's plan would also impose a 25% stock buyback tax for oil and gas companies that repurchase their own shares, Wyden spokeswoman Ashley Schapel confirmed. Both levies apply to oil and gas companies with at least $1 billion in revenue and would expire at the end of 2025, according to the people briefed on the plan. The 25% levy would likely deter many corporations from doing buybacks and is a steep increase from similar proposals that have been floated previously. House Democrats last year approved a 1% buyback tax as part of Biden's Build Back Better agenda that would apply to companies in all sectors. Wyden also proposes to eliminate an accounting benefit known as last in, first out, or LIFO, that can deliver tax breaks for oil and gas companies with at least $1 billion in revenue starting in 2023. This article is entitled "Natural Gas Slumps as LNG Shutdown Strands Supplies" by Christine Burma and Gerson Freitas Jr., Bloomberg. U.S. natural gas futures plummeted and European prices surged after the operator of a key Texas export terminal said it may take 3 months to partially restart the facility following a fire last week. The new timeline from Freeport LNG is much longer than many market participants had anticipated and matches the worst-case scenario posited by at least one analyst. Freeport previously said its facility would remain closed for at least 3 weeks. Gas for next month's delivery in New York tumbled as much as 19% to $7.008 per million British thermal units, as the shutdown threatens to leave supply stranded in U.S. shale basins. Futures settled down 16.5% at $7.189. The prolonged outage is bad news for European consumers who have scrambled in recent months to find alternative supplies after the war in Ukraine jeopardized imports of Russian gas. European gas futures on the Tidal Transfer Facility hub in Amsterdam jumped as much as 21% to €101 per megawatt hour. Though Freeport LNG is targeting a partial restart in about 90 days, a return to full operations isn't expected until late this year, the company said in a statement Tuesday. Preliminary observations indicate the June 8th explosion that caused the blaze occurred when too much pressure on a liquefied natural gas transfer line caused it to rupture, releasing and igniting a gas vapor cloud, Freeport said. That is definitely a near-term game-changer, said Dennis Kistler, senior vice president at Bock Financial Securities. The $10 area now seems miles away for U.S. gas. The fire at Freeport upended a gas market that was already in turmoil, not just from Russia's invasion of Ukraine, but also from tight global stockpiles of the heating and power plant fuel. The U.S. has recently vied with Qatar and Australia to become one of the world's top LNG exporters, and Freeport accounted for almost one-fifth of all overseas shipments of gas from the U.S. last month. The U.S. sent nearly three-quarters of its LNG to Europe in the first 4 months of the year, and the region now getting almost half of its supplies from across the Atlantic. For U.S. consumers, the prolonged outage comes as a relief, alleviating strain on domestic supplies and halting a bull run in which prices more than doubled this year. A three-month shutdown of Freeport should curb natural gas demand by 182 billion cubic feet, according to an estimate from Analytics A1. To put that in context, gas stockpiles are about 340 billion cubic feet lower than normal. The Freeport outage alone could narrow that gap by more than half, assuming other market factors are unchanged, said Harry Mateer, an analyst at Barclays PLC. This is meaningful in a tight gas market. The extra gas reduces the risk of critically low inventories by the end of winter to about 25%, from 40% previously, a trader said. Underscoring the easing of fears about a shortage, the so-called widowmaker spread between gas delivered in March and April, essentially a bet on how low inventories will be by the end of the winter, shrank 32%. To $1.178 per million BTUs. The Freeport incident occurred in pipe racks that support the transfer of LNG from the storage tank area to the terminal's dock. None of the production units or storage tanks were affected. Freeport, along with state, local, and federal officials, are investigating the incident. There were no injuries. The Freeport plant, which has the capacity to ship about 15 million tons per year, supplies gas to BP, PLC, and Total Energy's SE in Europe, as well as Japan's JERA Company and Osaka Gas Company and SK E&S Company in South Korea. This article is entitled OPEC: War Threatens to Slow Pace of Oil Demand Rebound by Grant Smith. OPEC warned that the conflict in Ukraine and the persisting pandemic pose a threat to the strong recovery in oil demand it's expecting in the second half of the year. Global oil consumption is set to climb by 3.1 million barrels a day to average 101.8 million a day in the second half, surpassing pre-COVID levels, the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries said Tuesday. Yet it cautioned that the rebound could be derailed by inflationary pressures, virus outbreaks, and the economic fallout from Russia's war in Ukraine. Current geopolitical developments and the uncertain rollout of the pandemic toward the end of the second half of the year continue to pose a considerable risk to the forecast recovery to pre-pandemic levels, the group's Vienna-based research department said in its monthly market report. The cartel and its allies surprised traders earlier this month by agreeing to speed up the return of production halted during the COVID crisis, assenting to U.S. entreaties after months of refusal. President Joe Biden is planning a visit to group leader Saudi Arabia in the coming weeks, as the inflationary pressure inflicted by the market turmoil forces him to reverse an initially tough stance toward the kingdom. The organization's own data indicate that world markets will tighten sharply unless it opens the taps. An average of 29.65 million barrels a day will be needed from the group during the third quarter, the report showed. Yet, OPEC's 13 members pumped 28.51 million barrels a day in May, with their output slipping by 176,000 a day amid renewed disruption in Libya. Most nations of the group and its allies in the OPEC Plus coalition are unable to boost production further, as they struggle with diminished investment and operational outages. Spare capacity is confined to the core members in the Persian Gulf, and even their untapped supplies may be eclipsed by the losses caused by sanctions on Russia. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, June 15th. Jack Manning. Jack Manning, 96, passed away peacefully to join his bride in heaven on Sunday, June 12th in Odessa. The family welcomes friends to join them for funeral services at 10 a.m. Thursday, June 16th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home, with Brother Clydell Chapman of Northside Baptist Church officiating. Graveside services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, June 18th at Restland Cemetery in Gatesville, Texas. Jack was born on November 26, 1925 in Coryell County, Texas. Jack is preceded in death by his wife, parents, and all five siblings. Jack is survived by his sons, C. Jack Manning and wife Rhonda of Odessa, Bob D. Manning of Gatesville, seven step-grandchildren, and many great-grandchildren. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens. To send condolences to the family, please sign his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Patrick Stephen Swihart, Sr. Patrick Stephen Swihart, Sr. was born March 14, 1927, in Coffeyville, Kansas, to Ralph Charles Swihart and Isla Fern Aitchison Swihart. He always went by Pat Swihart. Pat was preceded in death by his parents, Ralph Charles Swihart and Isla Fern Aitchison Swihart of Kerrville, Texas, a sister Martha McGraw of Houston, and daughter Patricia Ann Swihart Johnson of Midland. He is survived by his wife, Juanita Ruth Swihart of 68 years, his three sons, Patrick Stephen Swihart, Jr. of Sarasota, Florida, Michael Charles Swihart of Midland, James Haas Swihart of Amarillo, and his two daughters, Melinda Catherine Parrish of Kaufman, Texas, and Sharon Ruth Swihart of Midland. Survivors also include nine grandchildren, 18 great-grandchildren, and two great-great-grandchildren. The family will receive friends from 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, June 15th at Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be at 11 a.m. Thursday, June 16th at the Nally Picklin Welch Chapel. Graveside will be reserved for family on Monday, June 20th at 11 a.m. at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Rose Snyder. Rose Snyder of Midland passed away of natural causes on May 19th in Midland. Those left to cherish Rose's memories are her children, Lynn, Jonathan, Thomas, Brandy, Michelle, Hope, Clayton, Athena, Ronnie, Christopher Sr., as well as several grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Rose was preceded in death by her husband, Joe, mother, Anita, grandmother, Sarah, husband, David. Memorial services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, June 18th at Mount Calvary Missionary Baptist Church, 303 East Shandon Avenue, Midland. Celebration of life will continue that evening at 410 Woodcrest Drive in Midland. Death notices. Ernest Webb. Ernest Webb, 84, of Midland, passed away June 13th. The family will receive guests from 6 to 8 p.m. Friday, June 17th at Nally Picklin Wells Funeral Home. Graveside service will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, June 18th at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Sammy Beggs. Sammy Beggs, 90, of Midland, passed away June 12th. Memorial service will be held at a later date. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
This is Connie reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, June 15th, 2022. Aging pipe leaves Odessa high and dry. Officials hope repair to 60-year-old pipe wraps up overnight, by OA News. City of Odessa officials anticipated fixing the water line break that created a day-long headache for many Odessans by 8 p.m. Tuesday, but it'll take at least 10 to 12 hours before people will be able to flush the toilets again, and at least another 12 hours after that before they can drink the water. City utility workers were informed of a water line break around 6 p.m. Monday, and due to the loss of pressure, they were forced to take the city's water plant offline, which prompted a boil alert to be issued for all of Victor County around 1 a.m. Tuesday. All this during 100-plus degrees days. Workers discovered a major 24-inch water line had broken at 42nd and San Jacinto Streets, and Utilities Director Tom Kerr said his crews spent the majority of Tuesday evacuating the water around the pipes so they could get to it and repair it. At that point, we will need to recommission the system and restart the plant and start loading the pipeline system and getting people back in water. We anticipate that may take 10 to 12 hours, as we have never done this before with our system like this, Kerr said. When the system is reloaded, Kerr said they'll be moving very deliberately. We're not going to proceed very quickly. We don't want to go slow, but we've got to be careful so that we can reduce the risk of other breaks occurring, Kerr said. Residents who live in lower parts of the county and city will receive their water first, Kerr said. The boil alert will continue to be in effect for 24 hours after the system is up and running again, Kerr said. The city will be conducting state-required tests to ensure there are no harmful bacteria and other microbes within the system. The city began distributing bottled water around 2 p.m. Tuesday at 3 distribution points throughout the city, and continued to do so until 7 p.m. or until the water runs out, officials said. About half of the available water was gone within 40 minutes. Council members Mark Mata and Denise Swanner helped distribute water at McKinney Park, but water was also available at the Ector County Coliseum and West University and FM 1936. The city also delivered water to each of its 7 senior centers. The water was donated by the West Texas Food Bank, various local vendors, and the Texas Department of Emergency Management. 6 18-wheelers carrying additional water from Lowe's, Home Depot, and T. Durham was expected to arrive Tuesday night and will be handed out today, but the times have not yet been announced. There were also two waterline breaks in Lawndale last month, and Kerr attributed Monday's break in those to an aging water system. The 24-inch pipe that broke Monday is well over 60 years old, he said. Odessa is not really unique in this nature. Aging water systems are common throughout the country, and it's often difficult for municipalities to be able to afford to manage those systems well as they age. This is the situation that we find ourselves in, Kerr said. What made this break particularly bad was the size of the water line and its proximity to the water plant, Kerr said. This one is our large mains. It's a transmission line, and it feeds directly off of our plant. Our plant is at 42nd and Golder, so very close. It was bleeding so hard that we just could not maintain enough flow to keep the system online, Kerr said. Portions of that particular water line are on a priority list, but they're not the only ones on the list, Kerr said. We do have it as a priority on our list, but it's not the only one. There are numerous areas where we have cast iron lines that are well over 60 to 70 years of age, Kerr said. Kerr asked residents to conserve water when the system is up and running, at least for a few days. Mayor Javier Hoven, Deputy City Manager Philip Urrutia, and Odessa Fire Rescue Chief John Alvarez expressed their appreciation to Midland County and the state for their assistance in dealing with the crisis. But they also praised the hard work of city staff, many of whom have been working nearly 24 hours in the heat. Earlier in the day, Hoven explained that the city's water system has a series of veins, arteries, and capillaries. The water main break affecting Odessa was a result of a major artery breaking. Hoven and high-ranking city staff spent the day at a command post that had been set up at the Coliseum as the city dealt with the crisis. Swanner and Mata had spent time at the post, as did people from the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality and the Texas Department of Emergency Management. Countless businesses and public offices across the city shut down Tuesday due to either no water at all or just a trickle. UTPB, city offices, county offices, Odessa College, and many restaurants and businesses had signs up declaring their lack of water and closed doors. Ector County Independent School District also canceled its summer school sessions. Ector County Judge Debbie Hayes declared a state of emergency in Ector County at about 11 a.m. Tuesday. The move was intended to free up funding to help with the emergency. State Representative Brooks Landgraf said that in addition to the state sending water to Odessa, it was also helping with the repairs on the water line. The city provided water to Medical Center Hospital and Odessa Regional Medical Center after officials expressed concern about their chillers. MCH CEO Russell Tippin said early Tuesday that all clinics had closed at MCH and ORMC, but that they opened back up in the early afternoon. All surgeries were canceled at both hospitals. The Salvation Army office was made available as a cooling center. People were permitted to stay for 30 minutes and have a bottle of water. They were given one when they leave as well. Tankers of water were strategically placed around the city in the event of any fires. Urrutia said, "I'm proud of the community coming together." The city of Midland has been great, and actually Midland's utility crews were with us last night providing assistance. Urrutia said Tuesday morning, We have Midland Fire Department providing us help, and Ector County is bringing us resources. We've notified Andrews County, and all of the volunteer firefighters have their tankers ready to go if we need them. Alvarez, who has been with the city more than 30 years, said this is the first time he's seen a citywide water issue, but this scenario is one of many the city anticipates and prepares for. What we call ourselves is All Hazards Approach. It could be anything, earthquake, active shooter, this mess here. We try to do everything, Alvarez said. According to officials, children, seniors, and persons with weakened immune systems are particularly vulnerable to harmful bacteria. To ensure destruction of all harmful bacteria and other microbes, water for drinking, cooking, and ice making should be boiled and cooled prior to use for drinking water or human consumption purposes. The water should be brought to a vigorous rolling boil and then boiled for 2 minutes. Task Force makes request for broadband funds by OA News. A request for matching funds was brought to the Ector County Commissioner's Court Tuesday by the ConEctor Task Force. If the county and other entities chip in, it would give the task force a chance at funds from the State Broadband Development Office. The ConEctor Task Force was established in 2020 during the pandemic. Ector County ISD Chief Technology Officer Kelly Wilkes, George Marshall, Broadband Development Public Sector, and Michael Mitchell, Services Account Executive, both from Inside in Austin, presented on the benefits of providing broadband to the community. Marshall said Insight is acting as a technical advisor to ConEctor. Wilkes requested matching funds from the American Rescue Plan money. She gave a range of $1.5 million to $10 million. Wilkes said $10 million total is what they need. Commissioners didn't indicate a decision on this. That's local, private, and public funding, she said. They could give $25. The ConEctor Task Force has been going along under the radar, and now they are ready to open an office. Wilkes doesn't know where they would set up shop yet. We need to hire an executive director and determine space needs first, but it'll be here in Ector County somewhere, Wilkes said. She said they will be going to other entities, too. This is the first stop, so there will be other entities, like I said, private and public, Wilkes said. Surveys were conducted that determined that 39% of families did not have internet access, and those that did found it expensive and/or of poor quality. ECISD partnered with Starlink because there was a need for students in West and South Odessa to have internet immediately. Some 120 families now have Starlink service. We caught the attention of the Dallas Fed. They have a philanthropic arm that helped us out. The Texas Broadband Development Office was established this year, Wilkes said. We partnered with Magellan through the Dallas Fed and created our first digital acceleration plan, she added. She said they are at the point this year where they need to establish funding to establish a public-private partnership or P3 organization and hire an executive director. If we do this, we're in a good position to get funding from the state, Wilkes said. In his presentation, Marshall said transitional public-private partnerships, P3s, are contractual arrangements where the resources, risks, and rewards are shared between the public and private sectors to provide greater efficiency and better access to capital. Through this agreement, the skills and assets of each sector, public and private, are employed to deliver a service or facility for the use for the general public. The public's interests are fully assured through provisions in the contracts that provide for ongoing monitoring and oversight, the presentation detailed. In other business, commissioners approved reappointing Gus Ortega to the Board of Trustees of PrimaCare for a 2-year term beginning June 26 to June 25, 2024. Approved a request by UTPB Career Service for Ector County to serve as a host site for interns and to allow department heads, elected officials to sign the work site agreements for their respective departments. Approved a proposed ban of rockets with sticks and missiles with fins for the 4th of July fireworks season. Approved donating units 1066 and 1080 with light bar to the West Odessa Volunteer Fire Department. Approved a temporary portable building for an animal shelter. Approved the purchase of a replacement vehicle that was totaled in an accident and approve a budget amendment to general funds. Approved the purchase of Leadwell Yard box dump truck for the Public Works Department. Approved the purchase of a Leadwell 4,000-gallon water truck for the Public Works Department. Approved the purchase of a 2022 John Deere 524P wheel loader for the Public Works Department. Approved the proposal for the abatement of junked vehicles. Approved the renewal of bids for building maintenance, housekeeping supplies, and building maintenance housekeeping equipment with an increase in cost for housekeeping. Approval and agreement with Global Asset on the recycle, recover, and disposal of information, technology, and telecommunication equipment. And finally, approved changing the job description from project manager to director of planning and zoning and authorized the county judge to sign. Quick hits. Juneteenth events. Black Cultural Council of Odessa will celebrate Juneteenth events today through Sunday. Schedule of events are as follows. Today, 6 p.m., opening gospel concert featuring Fred Hammond at First Baptist Church, 709 North Lee Avenue. Admission is free. Text CONCERT to 40778 for VIP seating. Thursday, 7 p.m., Dallas Black Dance Theater at OHS Performing Arts Center, 1301 North Dotsie Street. The Black Cultural Council of Odessa will also present the second annual all-white party featuring violinist Dominique Hammond at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, 305 East 5th Street. Doors open at 9 p.m. Admission is $25 per person. Tickets may be purchased at the door. Local news roundup. Odessan arrested following argument. A 42-year-old Odessa woman was arrested Friday after neighbor told police she pulled a gun on her and three children. According to an Odessa Police Department report, a resident of the 900 block of East 21st Street called 911 and said she'd gotten into an argument with Annie Diaz about parking. The woman told officers that during the argument, Diaz pulled a small black handgun from a black case and pointed it at her, two 15-year-olds, and her 12-year-old daughter, causing them to fear for their lives and retreat into the house. Diaz told officers that when she arrived home, she discovered her neighbor had blocked her driveway and she asked him to move. At that point, Diaz said she thought the man had a gun in his front pocket, and she said she yelled that if he did have a gun, she had a legal gun with her. According to the report, Diaz said the gun was in her purse, and officers found a Ruger handgun in her purse that matched the description provided by the victims. Diaz was arrested on suspicion of 4 counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. She was released from Ector County Jail Saturday after posting surety bonds totaling $100,000. Mallet attack leads to Odessa's arrest. A 53-year-old Odessa man was arrested Thursday after another man told authorities he attacked him with a rubber mallet. According to an Odessa Police Department report, officers received a 911 call about an assault on the 800 block of Foster Avenue around 8:30 p.m. June 4th. The 51-year-old man told police he'd been lying down on a pallet when an intoxicated Guadalupe Verzosa walked in, struck his head and body with a rubber mallet, and then walked outside and down the street. The owner of the home gave police the same account of the incident and told them Verzosa also lived in the neighborhood, according to the report. Officers found blood on the pallet and injuries consistent with a mallet, the report stated. Verzosa was arrested June 9th on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. He remained in the Ector County Jail Tuesday on a surety bond of $25,000. Ellen Noel Art Museum gets grant by OA News. Austin. Texas Women for the Arts, a program of Texas Cultural Trust, TXCT, has selected 33 arts programs across the state to receive nearly $170,000 in grants at their 16th annual meeting that took place on April 25th and 26th in San Antonio. Texas Women for the Arts Impact grantees include the Ellen Noel Art Museum, Texas Women for the Arts, TWA, is one of the TXCT's statewide giving circle with nearly 200 members from all over Texas. Through their collective generosity, TWA invests in the arts and arts education with the mission of increasing access to the arts for all Texas children.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.